the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level, Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus aurelius by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a crispy and crunchy 365 degrees centifarengrade in height. To keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Randy? And who else is here? Oh, Jeremy. Murder Dog.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Can you feel it? It's working so far, Lou.
My female.
Good evening, guys.
Vibrating. I think that means something.
And the piece is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So how's it going, boys? I haven't spoken to either of you in quite some time. I am looking forward to seeing you guys at the end of June.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And what's going on at the end of June, Randy?
The Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, unless in your latest committee meetings you change the name of it or something, right?
No, it's still the same or close to it.
Okay, or close to it, or a close proximity. You know.
I started going because it was the closest one to where I live, and it's not close. It's still 8 hours away or something, but I came back because it was so much fun.
Your drive is shorter than mine now.
Now, do you go around, or you do come across the, you know, from the Upper Peninsula to the lower?
I travel east from the Western Upper Peninsula over to the Eastern Upper Peninsula, cross the Mackinac Bridge, and then travel west to Kalamazoo.
Well,
southwest.
Maybe even if you have to go further, you don't have to go through Chicago, so maybe it works out okay on time after all. Yeah. I hate that up there. I hate going through there. What a mess. I mean, have they ever had those roads not just torn up everywhere? You know, no offense, but man.
Well, that's like how it is everywhere. Mess.
I'm not just picking on Illinois either, because Indiana just sucks in there, too.
Yeah. But Michigan sucks, too. The state flower is the orange barrel.
It should be the traffic cone here in New York, because we're always like that, too. There's one stretch of road that's been under construction since as long as I can remember, which is when I moved here, which was in 93. So that's how many years ago now the same stretch of road has been under construction the entire time, 20-something years later.
But that's a lot of jobs, and that's a lot of years there.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, of course.
If I were to go through Milwaukee and Chicago and all that other stuff, it would probably... It'd probably only be a difference of, I think, 5 or 10 minutes.
Well, then it's definitely worth avoiding that.
Yes, yeah, it is.
And it's a little bit longer to go through Chicago, distance wise.
Hmm. Now, what are the dates for the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest?
Okay. Here's something new, is starting a day earlier than it normally does. It used to be Friday through Monday. The first full day is on Thursday. So people come in on Thursday morning, and they'll start getting set up. And it will go from Thursday morning all the way through Monday morning.
But the program and things like that probably don't start till the afternoon on Thursday, huh?
Probably not. I think Thursday is probably going to be a lot more relaxed. Nothing's been put together as far as the schedule goes yet. But Thursday is probably going to be a get set up, hang out, shoot the bull, eat jerky, drink beer, say hello to people that you haven't seen in a long time.
All right. So it'll run through Sunday. Well, through Sunday, and then Monday is breakfast and clean up and go home that way.
Yeah, Monday morning is break down your camp, get breakfast, and I'm planning on preparing breakfast for everybody that's still there on Monday morning.
Yeah, and hopefully I'll actually get to eat some this year.
Yeah, that's right.
I swear, Lou came up there and said, "Hey guys, breakfast. What are you doing?" And I said, "All right, Lou." And I followed him down there, and then there was no food. And I'm like, "Wait a minute! It wasn't like I waited. As soon as you said come get your breakfast, I was there." And by the time it took us to walk back down, everybody had eaten everything.
Yeah, and
I feel bad. I got breakfast. It was good.
Yeah, a bunch of people got in there and anarcho-communized everything. But yeah, Randy, I think you were the first to get served.
I didn't come to the head of the line. I needed to leave and I was getting ready to go, and Lou grabbed me and said, "You've got to eat breakfast." And I said, "I can't hang around." He goes, "Well, come to the front of the line." And I thought,
well, you usually bug out early. Bug out on Sunday afternoon.
That's true. I stayed a bit longer, but it was worth sticking around for. Lou's a great cook, everybody. If you show up and this get a chance for one of his meals.
Objectively true.
Between Porkfest and Michigan, I ate quite a few meals with Lou, and they were all yummy.
All coming right out of the mobile assault kitchen.
Yep.
Did I get that right? Yes.
Yep. Or even off of the campfire.
Well, that's true. Yeah. That breakfast was over the campfire, wasn't it? Or wasn't it?
I can't
remember. Yeah.
Yeah, because I had that big giant 16-quart crock pot that I use for making the sausage hash.
It sounds good just thinking about it. Well, is there anything, since it's going to be a day longer this year, is there anything, you know, new things that might be coming other than, the kind of the program that we've been, following for several years in that, which was great. But I figured, if you get an extra day, you may have some extra ideas, right, Lou?
Well, for as much time as I spend running around and cooking and doing all that other stuff, I might just use my extra day for sitting around at the assault camper.
Yeah.
That's one of the best things about coming to this is that other programs that you have, first, if you go to a Liberty get together that's in a hotel or something, that is the least conducive to meeting people.
Oh, they're horrible.
It's terrible. I mean, if you have some friends there, you're probably going to meet them in the bar or something like that. But if you're just wanting to meet the people there, it doesn't work nearly as well as an outdoor camping venue situation. And if you go to Porkfest in New Hampshire, which is that at the same time?
This year it's going to be, yes. And they've also shortened theirs, so.
So they're almost the same length
now. Yeah, because they're starting on Wednesday, I believe, this year, I think I read.
Well, I don't know how big they'll be, but they reached a very large size, I think, at some point, and could not begin to meet everybody. I mean, the biggest disappointment that I had from going to Porkfest was getting ready to leave and realize how many people were there that I wanted to meet and didn't get to. And the Michigan Peace and Liberty Fest, it isn't as big. It's probably still too big to meet every single person there, but you can do it if you really intend to. You just get out and start walking around from site to site and booth to booth, and you can actually meet and sit down and talk with people there, and everybody's got chairs out so you can sit down and meet. It's really a lot of fun. It's great. And there are good programs and people giving talks and things like that, but still, the just meeting with and talking with all of the other Liberty people is just great.
Yeah,
definitely. And I think you hit the nail on the head. And you can walk around from campsite to campsite, because it's not set up in designated campsites like campsite number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. People go and pitch their tents on the outer perimeter of either the meadow or over in the orchard. There's an apple orchard there, and that's usually where the people with families and children have a tendency to congregate. Those are usually the people that get up a little bit earlier, and it's a little bit quieter over there in the evening time, where the meadow is where the campfire pit is, and that has a tendency to be a little bit louder and stay up a little bit later.
Yeah, but anyway, I tend to kind of camp kind of halfway between those, so you don't, if you're too close, you'll be hearing it all night.
Yeah, yeah. I used to camp over there in No Man's Land with you. I think I did 2 years out
there. Yes, you did. But then you got a camper where you can close your windows. And so it's still doable probably over in the meadow now, even though you're closer to the rambunctiousness that may go on.
It really later. Doesn't get that loud at night, though. And there's people talking, but there's no screaming or any of that other nonsense.
So that's true. It isn't like what you might think. I don't.
It's not a rock concert.
No, there was some music. I was up there every night until the end of the night. So I'm like, what are you talking about? It was somewhat loud, not horribly.
I can vouch for you being there almost every night because I saw what you looked like every morning.
Yes.
Ooh.
Hey,
oh, what? Snap.
I had fun. What are you going to
do? No, he was having fun. There's no doubt in my mind.
But anyway, yeah, you can walk from campsite to campsite. People put out their lawn chairs. Some people have picnic tables over there, and you can go around and meet people, get a chance to shoot the bull with everybody. And what's really nice is, although it's the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, you get people from all over the place there. We've had New Hampshireites come out. We've had people from New York State. We've had people as far west as Colorado. We've had people from as far east as Indonesia, Florida, Georgia, from all over the place.
I really enjoyed Prof. CJ coming up from our history teacher coming up from Florida.
Yeah, Florida man came.
It'd be great if he was back there again. I'd enjoy that again. He was a very interesting fellow.
Yeah,
he's a college professor who teaches history, but has is it the Dangerous History podcast?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Check that out. It's pretty good.
As a matter of fact, some of his podcast episodes are airing on the Freedom Fiends on the weekends.
This is true.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
But anytime Florida Man can come to your festival and nothing horrible happens, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And you're going to have, I heard, Jeremy Hingler from Long Island, right?
Oh, yes. Yep. I'll be back.
And a special guest from Oregon.
Is he definitely going to make it?
The yak herder?
Yeah, we spoke on the phone a couple weeks ago. He was asking about the dates and looking at airfare. And
very good.
It looks like he's going to come out here.
Cool.
So I don't know if he's going to ride his yak out here. We should probably get a GoFundMe for a saddle and yak feed just in case.
Nick Hazelton, my favorite Stoic.
All right,
Freedom Fiends. We'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone proof.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends Radio Show. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgoristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agorist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, go with AgoristHosting.com.
Sacrilege. I swear I have no idea what's wrong with you people.
Listen, man, I can't get the uniformity of the bacon cooked when I do it within it. I mean, I don't mind eating pan-fried bacon. It's just, it's never uniformly cooked. Now, when you bake it or roast it, as Paul Gordon calls it, it comes out perfectly evenly cooked, and it's absolutely scrumptious. So
that's because he uses coercion to make the bacon flat.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Bacon and Weed, the Road to Freedom Show. So,
sounds like a good combo for me.
Guns and bacon, I don't know.
Yes, we're discussing the proper way to cook bacon. Now, Jeremy's lady friend, who is a very nice person, aside from the fact that she cooks her bacon in the oven, which it is fine in a pinch. Like, if you need the stovetop space to do up your bacon, that's fine. But the proper way...
Fiend phone.
Second segment. Who had? Randy, I had second Randy segment. I win. Wins. I win. I thought you took the first segment.
Yes. Excellent. This is the Freedom Fiend Phone Unnecessary Random Reeducation Center Exigency. Oh, okay. Well,
welcome, Michael. There is no one here happier to hear from you than me.
Good. Good. Do you hear a background hum noise?
I hear.
How about now? Is it gone?
Yes, now it's gone.
All right. Yeah, I'm working on it. Yeah, I finally got, remembered.
Michael, one more thing. You're a little loud.
All right. Well, let me hear. How's it better? A little better. All right. Is this better?
You are buffing hard.
Yeah, Lou's. I'm going to turn it up more. Ooh, we're getting that too. Yeah. All right. Perfect. Is buffering? How is it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're buffering. You're buzzing.
All right. Well, I'll work on it and come back.
No, you're okay now.
You're buffering to me. You're buffering, Grandpa.
You're sounding like a show on Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah.
I'll work on it and come back. I'm experimenting. I'm using Bill Buepert's laptop. The laptop that Bill Buepert had. And remember, he was a fiend a long time ago?
Yeah.
And I remembered, you know, so he said that he's going to take a year off from the Fiends. And then, so it's been 2 years. I told him the other day, I was like, so, you going to be on the Fiends? He's like, well, actually, a year ago, he said he wasn't good. But we kind of left it open. And I called him the other day that he was not coming back. He was busy with other things. And I wished him well. Then I said, oh, wait, we lent you a laptop. And he's like, oh, yeah. And he, oh, darn it. So he said he'd send it to me. And I'm, plugging back in, blowing the Afghanistan desert dust off of it and trying to get it to work.
Yeah, it's still dropping out a bit.
Yeah, I think.
All right. I'm going to go throw it in the ocean. I might come in later. Have a good show, guys. Worms.
See ya.
Worms.
No, I could have swore I had the second segment.
Ah, yes. I picked that one, but, maybe Michael will be back in the second one, and you can win too, Jeremy.
We are in the second one. Wait a minute.
No.
He's talking about the second
talking
hour.
About,
oh, the hour.
Yeah. Well, actually, we didn't clarify that when we were betting.
I thought I said second segment.
That was my,
and you said you would take the first. And then
yeah, you're right. I did. I was singing the first half hour, but technically, I think you're correct.
Yeah, whatever.
All right.
Either way, it didn't take long.
So this.
Meanwhile, freedom, bacon.
Yeah, this is the Freedom Furry Fiends, where we have pools on when Michael's going to show up, and since he might pop in multiple times, everybody can win. So the furries is kind of like the participation trophy, to where everybody can win. Everybody gets a trophy.
Woohoo!
You get interrupted, and you get a trophy.
Oh, that needs to be a meme.
So anyway, bacon. Now, there's nothing. It's not a mortal sin to cook bacon in the oven. It's more like the cardinal sin. And actually, I have a number of friends that do it, and they learned it from me. So you know, it's kind of like the pot calling the kettle black here. But the whole
kind
secret
like.
To that. Oh, okay, it's exactly like. Anyway. All right. So secrets that you need to know if you are going to be doing bacon in the oven. Bacon is mostly fat, and pretty much most of the pig is fat. But the way to lay it down is to have it on the baking sheet or whatever it is. Cast iron is good, or even having some tin foil on top of the cast iron. That way you don't have to clean up the cast iron cookie sheet. You don't have to clean that up because you got the tinfoil on there. But anyway, what you want to do is you want to lay it down so that the fat side is facing up and the meat is actually below the fat. And well, we'll continue when we come back.
How to bacon?
I'm going to drop some mad scientists here on bacon technology.
Sweet.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
You're going to have to be more specific, Luke. You make so many completely sacrilegious memes.
What was the meme? What was it? Maybe I saw it.
This is a American flag, and it has crosses thrown into where the stars are. So some of the stars are replaced by crosses. And it says, American Christian Conservatism. How many soldiers have to be nailed to this flag before you accept the U.S. government as your Lord and Savior?
So you were blaspheming the state.
Yes, I did say that one.
Yeah, both of their gods, to include their primary god of the state. But anyway, so before we go off on that subject, let's get back to bacon. Now, Randy,
we're here. Yes.
Yeah. So, Randy, you during the break, you started talking about you weren't sure about something. What was that?
Well, you were mentioning how to make bacon, you know, be kind of flat when you cooked it, and you said, well, you one side of the bacon is the meat side, and the other side is the fat side. And you lost me, because my bacon looks pretty much the same on both sides.
Okay. All right. Go to your refrigerator, and I'll talk you through it.
Okay.
Go get some bacon.
I got it right here in front of me.
Now, when I call it fat side up, when you're looking at a strip of bacon, you have the one part with the more meaty part. It's not about top or bottom here. It's like...
left and right.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
So okay, I got you.
So unless you just have pure strips of fat, then the fat side would be the fat, and the meat side would be the meat. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like the right side is the fat side, and the meat side is the left side.
Yeah.
Got that.
Okay. Yeah. So what you do is you lay the first one down like on the left side of your tray. Your baking tray, whatever, and then you'll put the fat side on top of the meat side on there. Now, a trick for keeping it flat, because bacon's going to curl up, it's actually the length of it is what causes it to curl up. So a good way to keep it flat is to use a knife or some scissors and cut your bacon strips in half before you even put them in.
Oh, okay, I can see that. So you're saying that what if you lay the fat side on top of the meat side, the fat side never gets to touch the metal, right? Or is it the other way around?
Except for maybe the first piece, but that's if you're going to bake it on a cookie sheet or
something. And a broiler. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so it does. Well, the fat side does face up,
yeah,
and the meat side doesn't face the broiler.
Yeah. Now,
which makes it crispy on the side.
The thing to do is once it's been going for turn the bacon halfway in between.
All right, who had the very next segment? That's
hello, buffering. Furry.
Oh, you're even
is
worse.
Is that a buffering?
Now. Yeah,
you're am I really?
Yeah.
I was just messing with me. All right, later.
He's in, he's out. He's kind of like a cat.
See, you're making this way too complicated, Lou. Like, I don't even go through like even worrying about what side of the bacon I'm just. I like.
No. I think Lou's onto something. This is good stuff.
I bake my bacon. That's how I've been doing it for the past couple of years, and mine doesn't shrink or curl up.
And you're probably doing it right. Well, the thing is, when you're baking it, it's less likely to curl up. But when you're pan frying it, that's when it will.
Well, so, yeah, exactly. And that's why I told you. That's why I prefer it this way, because the uniformity is just so much easier. I can lay an entire package of bacon in a roasting pan covered with tin foil, so I don't have to deal with the cleanup. And I can just pour the grease right into my little mug that sits next to my, next to my stove.
Now you're just being anal.
What?
Now you're just being anal. That's your OCD kicking in.
Well, yes, but it's efficient.
So anyway, but if you are going to use the roasting pan method in the oven, it's a good idea to drain the grease out about halfway, two-thirds of the way through. That way it will cook a little bit better. and get a little bit crispier.
Maybe if maybe it'll cook in a shorter period then, because I don't know. I stumbled across one of those things on YouTube. Like, here, cook your bacon this way. And it was like the whole trick was, you know, setting it to 400 degrees, but putting the bacon in cold when you start it and timing it from a half an hour from that. And it should come out, you know, quote unquote, perfect. And the first time I did it, I was like, holy crap, this is perfect. This is like amazing bacon. And, you know, I've just done that ever since.
Like there's another type of bacon.
Well, there's again, if you pan fry it, and it's I prefer crispier bacon. Like every once in a while, I prefer the bacon that's like, you know, a little more soggy and, you know, with certain kind of eggs and stuff. But like for the most part, if I just want bacon, I prefer crispy. And to do that in the pan, it just there's always spots that aren't, and it just it doesn't have that conformity for me that I prefer. So again, and it takes a little longer, but I also don't have to. I can do a bunch of other things while that's happening, and I don't have to pay attention to it, which for me is very convenient with my lifestyle with the dogs and the kids.
Well, now for the secret. The proper way to do bacon is in a large cast iron skillet, a deep cast iron skillet even, something along the size of a Dutch oven maybe. And this really works well if you're doing a couple pounds of bacon at a time, which you can't do with a cookie sheet or even you might be able to get maybe four cookie sheets in an oven, but you're not going to get a whole lot of bacon in there. You'll get maybe a pound or two.
But see, again, my oven will probably fit 4 pounds of bacon.
Yeah, cause how many racks do you have in your oven?
Two, but I fit a whole pound on one rack on one sheet, and I could fit four of those. I could fit four of those, and then in the oven. So yeah, I could fit 4 pounds in my oven.
Well, anyway, the proper way to do it is with the deep cast iron skillet, and you put a bunch of bacon grease in there, and then you just drop the bacon in. I usually cut it into half. So that you don't have the super long slices. Get it in there, let it deep fry in its juices, and it comes out perfect. And as a matter of fact, you can even get your crispy, crunchy stuff that you like on occasion. Yes. Or you can even have it kind of soft and soggy.
Yes, well, yeah, you're doing that in mass. Yeah, well, if you deep fry anything, you're going to get conformity, and I understand. I'm not saying it's the bad method. It's just more cleanup for me, and I'm lazy when it comes to that, man.
Well, it goes a lot quicker, and if you're using cast iron, then you've already seasoned it for the next use.
This is true. Mine is my cast iron is constantly seasoned by bacon because I use bacon grease to cook pretty much everything in it.
Yeah, me too. I use bacon grease and coconut oil.
Yeah, coconut oil I obviously any meat product, I definitely prefer to use bacon grease with. But
So, Lou, when's your show on the Food Channel going to start?
Well, we are doing the radio cooking show. So for everybody that's at home cooking along right now.
Cooking with Lou.
No, actually, I've been toying around with setting up a website for outdoorsing type stuff. Showing that, you know, it's going to be focused around camping and fishing, hiking, hunting, stuff like that.
Will all the videos be shot at the assault kitchen outdoors in the shade?
A little bit.
With a beer.
As a matter of fact, something I am planning on doing is putting some cooking and homesteading type stuff on there, particularly for the winter months. You know, when it's a little bit crappy out to go out and do all sorts of things, I will put some different cooking things on there, both how to and hey, check this out. I will try to avoid the segments that start off with hold my beer, you're gonna love this, because those
would be the best.
Well, those have a tendency to not turn out so well.
Those get a little messy.
So Randy, how do you cook your bacon?
Well, I'm gonna try what you said. I'm gonna put them in the oven, and I'm gonna put the fat side up, and it's going to be great. My wife actually probably cooks most of my bacon, but I can cook bacon. But I will stand there and correct her, though, and we'll get some.
Oh, you need to do it this way.
Now the nice thing about my method of cooking the bacon is I can put a big old Dutch oven on the campfire out at Liberty Fest. And throw the bacon in there, and it cooks pretty darn quickly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, obviously for mass production, that is definitely the best way to cook.
And you have to have a depth of oil for that to work, though, don't you? It has to build up.
But so quite frankly, when it comes to cooking bacon, is there any other way than mass production?
Yeah, no way that's really satisfactory, no, even when you're eating it alone, right?
Yeah, it's only because I can't afford that much bacon that I can, you know, that I have to try to limit myself.
You need to walk more dogs.
Yeah, I do. I want plenty of dogs. I have kids, man. And luckily only one of them likes bacon, so I don't have to share it with too many people.
Then walk the kids. Walk more kids.
Fiend phone.
Sorry, you got one that doesn't
Third
work
time a charm?
This is the fiend phone.
Oh, that's too loud. My goodness.
Too loud.
Oh, my goodness. My poor eardrums.
Is this too loud?
The buffers went out. Hold on.
You can come back up a little bit, but
all right. So
that's pretty good now.
Is it really buffering?
No. Okay. Now I don't hear you buffering. But you don't sound like you normally do either. So
yeah, how do I sound? I sound like you guys normally do, right?
It sounds good.
You're sounding much better, Michael.
Better than ever, or better than a few minutes ago?
Definitely better than a few minutes ago, and probably sounding on average.
You know, this is one thing I really like about having a show is I can basically do things on it that would get me kicked off if I were working for someone else. If I just said, you know, we're on syndicated radio. I'm trying some different configurations on different computers. I'm going to, you know, just interrupt the show and sound horrible if I need to. So I am going to write Bill Buport. He lost the power cable, but I was using one for my computer. But I'm probably going to tell him to just not bother buying me a new one, because I'm going to take that computer out and shoot it, because I don't think it works. And it wasn't the power cable I used for my computer, because I also tried it running on batteries. So that computer, 2 gigs of RAM is a hate crime. That's what I think. I don't know why anyone would make a computer like that. It's so frustrating. Because for like $20 more, they could add, you know, 2 more gigs of RAM, and it would be like a real computer. But, yeah. All right, have a good show. I'll be back later. Worms!
Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Are you tired of driving your kids to G.G. Allen's grave only to be unable to find the grave because some dick stole the headstone? Well, there is a solution. The Find G.G. Allen's Grave app for Android will give you door-to-grave directions. The Find G.G. Allen's Grave app uses advanced GPS protocols to guide you with voices to the exact patch of dust and grass where G.G. took his final dirt nap. Bring the kids. Do some needle drops at the G.G.est place on Earth. G.G. always had a huge underground following, but it's even bigger now that he's literally underground. So it's no surprise that lots of folks today take a pilgrimage to G.G.'s grave. But getting there wasn't easy. Until this app. Forget Graceland, forget the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Those are plastic places for old people with jobs. Hell, even CBGB's is gone, and that former hallowed ground is now a yuppie coffee bar. The real rock and roll mecca is an unmarked patch of grass in Littleton, New Hampshire, and our free app will show you how to get there. Get the Find G.G. Allen's Grave app today. Even if you're not planning to go there soon, the app is fun. The Find G.G. Allen's Grave app is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License, and it's from the good people at Beast Lick Internet Policy Commission Outreach Team, who also brought you Fiend Phone, the Freedom Fiends radio app, BIPCOT, MeowBit, and of course, Truth, Justice, American Way. The Find G.G. Allen's Grave app is free. Get it today on the Google Play Store or on Amazon. Your family will thank you. And don't forget to rate and review. Worms, eating G.G. Allen's face.
Festival show. Bacon and festivals. Bacon. The road to freedom.
Bacon.
B- Yeah, registration is not open yet for the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, but it will be up pretty soon. We've been hammering out the pricing. And but anyway, to check it out, mplfest.org. Once again, registration is not open yet. There's not a heck of a lot of information on there, but go ahead, check it out. And there's also Facebook groups. If you do some Google searches for Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, I'm sure you'll find something. A lot of great pictures on there, and it's going to be a good time. Come on out and meet the Freedom Fiends and a bunch of other cool liberty-loving people. And most likely, it will be celebritarian-free, as usual. So, Randy, yes. you have a very interesting story on your blog, and hopefully we can knock this out in the segment. I didn't even know that you have a blog.
Well, actually, it isn't a story. It's kind of a what I try to do. This is the blog that I have that's connected to my criminal law practice. And I actually don't add too much to it anymore. Once I filled up like all of the topics that I thought, you know, were interesting or interesting to me in criminal law, I started just adding big things. Like if a big case came down from the Supreme Court that really changed something, you know, I'd want to put something on that. And Michael brought up to me earlier today that he'd been on the blog and found a post that I had from, I don't know, a year and a half or so ago about how long the police were allowed to mess with you when they stop you out on the road. And for some reason, he thought that was fascinating. And at the time that I wrote the blog post, I guess I did too, because I'd forgotten about it. It'd been a while. But he was interested in talking about it. And, you know, I got to looking at it and I thought, well, you know, that is kind of interesting because, you know, you feel pretty, you know, a little nervous when you get pulled over, you know, by the cops, right? I mean, you don't even know what it's about. And if you know what your rights are and what to do and that. I mean, I never get tired of telling people, you know, never, you know, you never agree to a search. And if a cop gets a sniff or a whiff that he might have a live one, and he may, if he searches your car, he may find something, drugs or a gun or something like that, they don't want to let go of that. Now, if you're me and you got pulled over speeding and I'm this old guy and they see me, they're probably not going to be interested.
I can vouch that you're old.
What's that?
I can vouch that you are old. This is objectively true.
Well, Lou, I'm not sure how much interest they'd have in you either. But there are many people that are not yet in that category. I can remember when I was a kid and they like nothing better than pulling me over and hassling me, seemingly only for the reason that I was a kid. And I'm not black, but I hear blacks complain about this all the time, and I just assume that they treat them like they do kids. You know, they just want to get into their stuff, and they're just kids, and so let's do it. And I don't know why. Maybe they feel like they have a higher likelihood of getting something on you. But when, you know, a cop pulls you over, they're always asking you, you know, if they're writing you a ticket for, say, speeding, they'll, you know, they're going to ask you questions. You know, there's some really dumb questions. Well, they're not dumb on the cop's part. They're dumb on our part if we would actually fall into it, like the question that I like that a cop will ask if he has any suspicions at all while he's writing the ticket out. He'll say, "Do you have anything in your car that I should know about?" I mean, think about that, you know, that I should know about. It's like, do you have anything in your bedside
Fiend table phone.
That I should know
Fiend phone. I don't
know. Hey, Michael.
Hey, am I buffering?
You're back.
You're buffering.
I'm buffering. You know what? There's a huge snowstorm headed to Wyoming. I think I should stay off the show. All right. Worms.
Have a well, you time. Could stay on long enough to take us out of the segment, Michael.
Yeah, I will. But I'm going to stay off the rest of the show, I think. Well, I might come back. Who knows? We'll see.
We're selling squares for the second half. All right, Randy, so what's the magic number? How long are the police allowed to jerk you around? Because you buried the lead.
I wasn't back to it yet. Well, I think I'm going to have to do that.
All right, we'll talk about it in the second hour. That's what we'll come back with.
Do you want to be able to tell almost anyone almost anything with only two words? And how about if you could do it without saying a single word? Then you need Not a Guarantee, Wolbert's, the new app that's like Pocket Alibi Lite, in that it's like Pocket Alibi if Pocket Alibi only had two words instead of 200 words. Oh yeah, and if it also played the Wolbert's podcast. Wolbert's, that's our word. Not a Guarantee, Wolbert's, is from Beastlick Internet Policy Commission Outreach Team, the good people who brought you Bipcoin, Fiendphone, and the best-selling app, Find G.G. Allen's Grave. Log on today at https://play.google.com and get the free Bipcot licensed app, Not a Guarantee, Wolbert's. Do it! Do it! Do it till you're satisfied!
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. And welcome back to the second hour. I'm Lou.
BIPCOT.org.
And I am joined by Randy England, Jeremy Murder Dog, and Michael Dean is in here to buffer.
Hey, yeah. Am I buffering?
No, you're actually doing pretty good this time.
You're all
That's
right.
A good connection.
Buffering. Take a buffer. Good gentlemen. Connection. Okay, yeah. I decided I'm definitely going to shoot this computer. Oh, I can hear you breathing, Randy, because I looked breathing. On. So it would require like $30 for a new mount, for a new power supply and mouse, and then like $40 to upgrade the memory, like 70 probably with shipping, like $75. For like $85, you can buy a computer better than this on eBay with it that's user that's refurbished. So
yes.
So anyone who says make theme phone for my operating system, no, just spend $85 and get a Windows 7 computer on eBay that has 4 gigs of RAM. You can run theme phone perfectly.
Now, that laptop that you loaned to Mr. Buford, is that a netbook?
Yeah, it's a really crappy netbook with 2 gigs of RAM.
Okay, because I have a netbook that you sent me.
Yeah, I put a bunch of money into refurbishing that too. It was pretty crappy. It was. I think that was 4 gigs of RAM, and I think I upgraded it to 8. Does it still work? Do you still use it?
I'm using it right now.
I'm soaking in it right now. So. Do you guys know what that is? Are you old enough to know what you're soaking in it now?
Palm olive.
Yeah, there was a ridiculous ad for
Madge
dishwashing liquid when I was a kid that was like, you know, the ladies in the cosmetology place getting their hair did and their fingers did. What, DJ?
A manicure.
And the lady, the manicurist is saying, yes, palm olive is wonderful for dishes. And she's like, but won't it hurt my hands? And Madge says, you're soaking in it now. And she pulls her hand out of this green liquid. Like, yeah, it might be mild on your finger, but like what manicurist in their right mind would say, here, soak in it. Like, what's the advantage? Why? Why are you going to soak in soap? It's not good for you. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So. This is strange. Michael never comes on for a second hour of radio at home.
Oh, yeah, the coffee one.
Taster's Choice.
Yep. Yeah.
Hey, welcome back to the old folks reunion show. Reminiscing about the time when TV came through an antenna.
Yep. Yep. We're actually going to probably cut the cord. I think we're going to cancel our TV. We had this deal.
You still have
with,
TV?
Well, oh, we have, that's right. Yeah, we have this deal with our phones where to get unlimited data, we had to get really cheap package from DirecTV. And so that was a year ago, like this week. And we got this letter from, DirecTV saying, well, your price is going up, blah, blah, blah. And so we cut some of the extra stuff on it, so it stayed the same price, but now we don't have HBO and stuff like that. So, and then we were talking tonight, we did the math on it, and I was thinking, I wonder if we can actually, I'm going to call AT&T tomorrow and find out if we can just cancel the TV now, because we've had the package for a year. I think it was a promo thing. We're spending $1,400 a year? That's what? Insane on TV. Yeah.
That is insane.
That's what most people spend, probably.
You can sign, you have Amazon Prime, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. You can sign up for like HBO and the different premium cable channels through Amazon Prime.
Really?
It's not very expensive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The old television networks are basically, it's a dinosaur thrashing in the tar pit.
They are. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I got rid of my cable altogether like 2, maybe 3 years ago now.
Yeah, wow. I went 6 years without having a TV at all, period. So obviously I didn't have cable, and I would watch TV shows on my laptop. Well, I recently picked up a TV right before Christmas because they had a little sale going on at Walmart, and I picked up a 32-inch Vizio, and it has the Amazon Prime, Hulu, Netflix, YouTube, and a bunch of other apps already in it. So I could just go into that from my remote control. I don't even have to use the HDMI cord.
On what? On your what?
On the television.
Amazon Prime, you mean?
No, it has the Amazon Prime in the TV. It's a smart TV.
They have the apps built in that you can do this. Yeah, see, I have a Roku on my TV, but it works the same way, basically. Just a little plug-in in the HDMI slot.
Yeah. So for the network shows, like if I want to watch something on CBS or NBC or Fox or something like that, I'll have to plug my laptop or something in there. But I'm thinking about getting the Chromecast to where I can just cast it from my phone or from one of my devices.
Yeah, that's handy. I keep meaning to do that.
I'm looking at this HBO thing because really the only reason we'd want TV is because DJ likes to watch Game of Thrones. And so you can get HBO through Amazon Prime for $15 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, and if that's the only thing you want, it's better to just pay for that, right?
Yeah.
Which is great because the cable companies don't usually offer that. I know mine don't. You know, the a la carte menu, you're not allowed to do. One?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't get an out. There's no a la carte. Like, to an extent, there is. I think, add-ons, but you're not allowed to pick, like, you have to have this basic pack. You have to have this basic package.
The add-on has to be HBO and Stars and something else and something else.
Well, sometimes, but even that, it's like there's still a basic package you have to have. You can't just go in and buy, just say, I just want HBO. I don't want I don't even want your basic cable package type deal, because I have no use for that either.
I think the only people still getting cable are old people who don't know the internet exists.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
And me.
My family has it. They're old. They know it exists, but they barely use it. I was just going to say, my mom, my grandmother, my uncle all live in the house together, and they're like, all 50 something plus. Old. So, they're an old group. My grandmother's 90. my mom's closing in on 70. So yeah, they're an old group over there.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of shows that you can watch off of the network websites.
Wow.
Yep.
Oh, you know what though? Not in Wyoming. There was something. What was that? HBO DJ? What was it? HBO Go, yeah. Like, you can't get it in Wyoming. It's the only state. I think that, the Ranches Laters wanted to protect people from the Sopranos, the strippers, the half-naked strippers or something.
Or they wanted to protect the brick-and-mortar local TV shows.
Probably, yeah. Brick-and-mortar.
Of course.
Yeah, well, supposedly the internet tax is supposed to start March 1st here, but nobody really knows if it is or not, because
the legislature and the they can't pass it. Like, the legislature won't pass it. So the governor is going to just, like, signing statement, you know, like write it down on paper and make it happen. He did a deal with Amazon to just collect the tax. Think about that. Like, basically, a guy just woke up one day and said, I'm going to mug everyone in a state, you know, and they can't do anything about it except not shop
well,
at one place.
It's been going on for about 10,000 years.
Well, not everyone, because isn't it just like you and the college kids in that state that use the internet anyway?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The rest of the people aren't actually going to get robbed.
It's true.
No, because some dusty cowboy will come into the cafe or the bar and just
talk about a beef he heard on Facebook.
Knock the dust off of himself with that gravelly Sam Elliott voice and hang his hat up on the rack and say, "Man, you wouldn't believe the drama on Facebook this morning."
I know. Pull his smartphone out of a holster on his big wide belt with a state of Wyoming belt, which would actually just be a belt buckle. It would actually just be a rectangle. But
yeah, the belt buckle is actually a chicken plate from Body Armor.
I like that. If you start getting a gunfight, you can just pull it up over your heart.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, but I don't know if it's...
That or your pocket constitution.
How about a pocket constitution engraved into Body Armor?
Why?
That's something you could probably sell to somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Think about it. Think about the people who buy Body Armor on the radio who already have Body Armor. You could probably sell them the same Body Armor again if you put the Constitution into it. Like, the whole thing. Like, really tiny. Or just the Bill of Rights. That'd be great.
Yeah, the Bill of Rights, because that's the part that most people have read.
I know.
Yeah, you don't want to mess around with that.
My rights.
Yeah, but we don't know if it's actually going into action on March 1st or not. It's up in the air because it was declared unconstitutional in either a North or South Dakota ruling state in the Supreme Court in like 1994 or something, when most people hadn't even heard of the internet. Some state tried to charge sales tax on the internet. And the Supreme Court said it was unconstitutional. So, but I think that the governor of Wyoming, the small government Republican, gun-loving Republican, who basically campaigned on all that, is going to say, I don't care what the Supreme Court says. I know the Constitution in my heart, so I can interpret it how I want.
Well,
which is what the Supreme Court does.
Well, yeah. If it's in his heart.
If it's in his heart. Yeah.
That's okay.
What's that guy's name? The governor. Matt Mead. Yeah. Yeah, we're talking to you, Matt Mead. You're square. And this does play on the radio in Wyoming. So there.
You tell
him. Get your government hands off my internet.
Well, Michael, we were about to, if you're going to be around for it, we got a break here in a minute. Well, we were about to get into that case that you were interested in about the traffic stops.
Yeah, I'm going to hang out with DJ. She got to go to sleep soon. But cover it. Cover it anyway. It's good. Good. I'll listen to it and learn.
Okay, we'll do that.
Yep. You know, I have to do one segment because according to Fiend Union rules, in the Fiend Union and rule book, it says, quit eating candy.
Yeah.
If I do one segment, I was on that show and I can put it on the website.
Before you leave, how do you spell furries for when you
F U R R I E S?
Okay.
Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to The Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Are back, Freedom Fiends. So, Randy, before you were furried, you were talking about how long goons can keep you held hostage at a traffic stop. And this
I was furried.
And this is a blog post from your blog site. Where can people find your blog?
It's at jeffcitylaw.com, J-E-F-F-C-I-T-Y, law.com. And one of the links from there is the blog. But anyway, yeah, there was this case. There's this case of this guy who got pulled over by the cop for just a minor traffic violation. I don't even know what it was. But he checked the guy's license and registration and wrote the guy a warning ticket. Didn't even get a ticket for whatever he was doing. But then at this point, the cop asks him, hey, I'd like to get the drug dog and sniff around your car. And the guy did the smart thing. He says, no, I'm not giving permission, and wanted to go. And the cop said, nope, you're going to stay here. I'm going to get the dog, and we're going to do this. And so it took the cop. Here's the time. You want to know the time. It took the cop 7 to 8 minutes until a backup cop arrives with the drug dog. The dog sniffed around the car. They found the drugs, and the guy was convicted of the drug possession or distribution or whatever they ended up getting him for. And the Supreme Court came back and said they threw out the conviction. And they said, no, the cop's job when he pulls somebody for a traffic violation, you know, only accuse a few things that have to do with the safe operation of a motor vehicle, like checking for a valid operator's license. They can check to see if you have outstanding warrants and looking at the car's registration, proof of insurance, that sort of thing. But they said that a dog sniff was not part of the traffic officer's mission, was what the court said. And basically saying that, you know, unless they have a real suspicion that they can articulate or say exactly why they think this guy's committing a crime right now, they cannot prolong the stop beyond the time necessary to complete the traffic thing they stopped him for. And when you write the ticket and hand the guy the ticket, man, it is over. At that point, when the cop says to you, oh, by the way, do you have any drugs in your car? He can't even do that. He's not even allowed to do that at that point. Or the one that they like to do most, you know, is they say, well, before you go, would you mind if I search your car? And, of course, the answer to that should always, no matter what, be no, whether this case had ever existed or not. But now the Supreme Court is saying the stop is over when the business of the stop is over, and they can't keep you there unless they actually have the proper, you know, have some real reason to believe that you've committed a crime other than just a suspicion because you're from out of state or something like that. And so no delay is allowed. Even if the delay is very, very brief, it's an illegal stop. Should be able to get the case thrown out if there aren't any other, you haven't done any other things to allow the stop to be good, like giving your permission, which is, you wouldn't believe how many people do that. I've sat across the table from so many people that were charged, you know, with drug possession. And I said, it says here in the reports that the cop asked you if he could search the car. And you said yes. And
stupid.
Yeah, they just say yes. And I guess what they do is, you know, I say, why'd you say yes? And they say, well, they thought that if they just acted cool, you know, about it and said, sure, man, that the cop, their cop, you know, the one that stopped in wouldn't bother, you know, once they said okay. Well, I don't think the cop's been born. It's not going to search after getting permission, you know, to search. So anyway, it's kind of good to know that if you can actually hold out until they get done and write you the ticket, you're on your way. You know, unless they've got something else, like they look in the car and see a roach in the ashtray or something, and then you're going to be screwed anyway.
So if I'm just driving around Bear Saskatchewan, and I want to give a little scenario here. I'm driving around Bear Saskatchewan doing loo type things, you know, cooking bacon while going down the road, and fly fishing. And some piggy pulls me over, and he wants to revenue generate me and everything else. If he asks to search the vehicle, the proper response, of course, is, no, I do not consent to any searches. Go pound sand.
You don't even have to say that last stuff. No is perfectly good and always wise.
Okay, so if they try to keep me around with this, well, you have to wait for the drug dog. What's my response before we go to break?
You say, well, if you say I have to stay, I'll stay, but I'm not consenting to staying. I'm not consenting to searching. You have to obey an order, but you don't have to consent to it.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Freedom Fiends, and we're back from the market. I'm Randy England. I'm here with Jeremy Hingler and Lou Fien. And Lou, you found a couple of, well, I guess they're related things that were very interesting about different, I guess, governmental sort of situations where they found out that they could actually make things better by just getting rid of governmental rules. And I know one of them had to do with getting rid of traffic stops, and the other one, even more surprisingly, had to do with getting rid of playground rules. Do I remember those right?
Yeah, you're pretty close. The concept that I want to introduce is, as an anarchist, the response to when somebody freaks out is, "Oh my God, anarchy! Ah, eek!" The normal response of an anarchist is to say, "Well, anarchy means no rulers. It doesn't mean no rules." And the three of us being anarchists, we understand the real meaning behind this, but there's this fascination with most people, and even some anarchists included, particularly the newly minted ones, or I don't know, maybe some that are rather conservative in their former statism, but there's this belief in rules. So when you say, well, anarchy means no rulers, not no rules, it means that, well, rules are necessary and they are important. And I notice this a lot with older folks, like my parents' generation, or even a few years younger than them. They throw an emphasis on rules, on the fact that they should exist and that they should be followed. And there's absolutely no emphasis on questioning the validity or the intelligence behind these rules. So the typical response from one of these statists would be like, well, we gotta have rules, otherwise insert whatever your issue is of what sort of insanity is gonna take over. Maybe you're Rand Paul and you think people are gonna be smoking pot and running around naked in the woods. I don't know, but anyway, there's this fascination that there should be rules, and one of the things that I've been giving a lot of thought to is, well, maybe there shouldn't be. Maybe a couple, because I'm sure you can have some pretty decent rules, like, let's say, kindergarten rules of don't hit people and don't steal their stuff. And the reason for that is because there's actual victims to those activities. But if you have the no chewing gum in class, where does that rule come from? Mostly it comes from, well, we don't want you chewing gum. Not that somebody's a victim by it, or not that it's even disruptive for the most part. But they have these rules, or not having, when I was in school, they didn't want you to have beverages in class, so you can bring a bottle of water or anything like that. And most people frequently carry bottled water these days. So why do they have these rules? Where do these rules come from? And my contention is that a lot of it comes from the control freakiness of control freaks and this desire to impose arbitrary declarations. There's also a belief that you can make these declarations and results will come out of it. Unfortunately, in many cases, and if we look at most of the laws on the books today, especially the prohibition type laws, we find that these rules, these laws, regulations, ordinances, threats of violence and theft actually cause more problems than they solve. So to go into the war on drugs, we know that prohibition creates the illicit market, which brings in some unsavory characters and provides a financial inducement to engage in violent activity to maintain and gain new territory. So most people have a tendency to say, well, if it wasn't for these laws, these drug dealers would be running like crazy. No, the laws, you know, the drug laws are should be called no cartel or police agency left behind, and that's the reason why drug dealers are going crazy. But anyway, when you look at traffic laws, and this is just a short excerpt here. This is from motorist.org, and I've looked at a few articles on here in the past. I think Diana and I talked about this a couple years ago. This particular one is called "What Happens If You Remove All the Traffic Signs from a City," and it says there's an interesting article over at the Wilson Quarterly. About a traffic engineer with some unique counterintuitive ideas on how to make driving more safe and enjoyable. Here's an excerpt. In the last few years, however, one traffic engineer did achieve a measure of global celebrity, known if not exactly by name, then by his ideas. His name was Hans Mondermann. The idea that made Mondermann, who died of cancer in January at the age of 62, most famous is that traditional traffic safety infrastructure, warning signs, traffic lights, metal railings, curbs, painted lines, speed bumps, and so on, is not only often unnecessary, but can endanger those it is meant to protect. And it doesn't go into a lot of great detail on here, but if you look at speed limits, the article that Diana and I discussed a few years ago was about Montana and speed limits. I guess out in the rural areas, they don't have any daytime speed limits. At one time, it was like 85 or something like that. But anyway, when they went from having no speed limits or like a super super duper high speed limit, down to lower speed limits, the number of accidents actually increased. And the reason for this is traffic has a natural flow, and the drivers will go at a speed that's available, or that they're safely able to drive. So what's a safe driving speed? Well, it's the speed that everybody's doing. And a lot of people have this argument, and they go to the extreme, and they say, well, do you want people going 100 miles per hour in a residential area? And the question is, well, why would they go 100 miles per hour in residential area? Or why would they go 100 miles per hour on a regular highway going through town? How are they going to go 100 miles per hour? How are they going to build up that type of speed? Particularly a residential area where you have some twists and turns and blocks and everything else, and you have cars popping out. So I know if somebody's on an actual high-speed chase, they're not going to be going that fast.
Yeah, and so I've been on a high-speed chase before, and we didn't even hit 100 miles an hour, and then it was in a residential. There was no way.
Okay, so you're also an underachiever as well as a scofflaw criminal.
Yes.
But anyway, so why would these things happen, and why are they going to happen? And if you give it a little bit of thought, if you're on like the expressway going to work or something like that, and the weather's really bad, you don't have people going 70 miles per hour or 80 miles per hour anymore. They slow down because of the conditions. It's snowy, it's icy, they slow down.
You would have some people, though, that would drive at ridiculous, insane speeds. What would you suggest? Oh, I'm in the slightest doubt that you would have some people that would do that. What I'm thinking is that there's no sign, there's no speed limit, but if someone actually either harmed or obviously endangered others, would there be any kind of possibility of controlling that system by the people who
you mean if I was a libertarian central planner?
Well, I don't know. I could have a private road and I'd live on it, and I'd sure as heck do something to stop that if somebody did it, including just banning them or something, you know.
Fine, if you want to ban particular drivers on your private property, you can. But the question is, do these traffic laws stop people from doing these things? And the answer is no. If you've ever driven, you know that it is, that it doesn't. But to be honest with you, if you have really, really bad weather, how many people do you see going 75, 80 miles per hour in that on snowy, icy roads?
No, people.
Well, not a lot, but typically you will see that rare person who is being dangerous things.
But exactly, they do it right now when those laws are in place.
Sure. All right. But so you're talking about removing any remedy that might now exist that person.
Well, no, there's not a remedy that currently exists. And the remedy is you have to give the government money. That's the current thing that happens. So it's revenue generation.
Well, a remedy
is where the victim is made whole again. That's what justice is. Who's the victim of somebody driving faster than they should?
Well, if it was my street in my neighborhood and we owned the street, then I would say all the people on my street were endangered by that person. And I would feel perfectly fine in saying, you know, this is either going to stop. I probably wouldn't want to find somebody. I'd kick them out.
Okay. But when you say that everybody in the neighborhood was the victim there, what is the demonstrable harm that was done to them?
Well, I realize that there's a divide even in, you know, libertarian circles as to whether, say, a drunk driver is actually committing an offense or not. You know, if on the one side, if the person is so drunk that every person that passes them on the road, you know, has a real possible likelihood of being killed by them, that person maybe should happen to them or shouldn't. People are divided on that. There's plenty of people that say, hey, it's already against the law to kill somebody, so if some drunk kills somebody, we'll deal with it. Or if they harm somebody, we'll deal with it, but we're not going to be pulling drunks off the road. And I realize that there is a divide there between people who think drunk drivers are actually committing a violation of the NAP, non-aggression principle, and those who think that they aren't. And honestly, I'm not sure myself. I kind of believe that when someone threatens my life, that they are violating the non-aggression principle, but I'm willing to talk about it.
Yeah, I don't have a 100% certain answer. I do find that the current system is geared more towards revenue generation rather than actual public safety. So that's more false advertisement on the part of the cops and courts.
You're right on that.
As far as what the drunk driving level should be or how you determine it, there's been plenty of times where I have driven in what could be considered drunk driving or operating under the influence or impaired or whatever it is that they call it. I'm not even sure the degrees on it. But if you go and have a beer and then take off and go home, you can blow on the breathalyzer and show up as being in violation.
Well, probably not. Not in many places. It would take three beers in most places for an average person to be in danger of blowing over a 0.08%, but go on.
Three?
You sure?
I thought it was two.
Nah, two wouldn't get you there unless you're some 85-pound little girl.
Oh, we'll try it out with Nick.
Unless the beers were doubles. Oh, come on, Luke.
Just to find out if he listens to the show when he's not on.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists who think you need a government permission slip for everything? Everything you do is an A to B conversation, and the government should see their way out of it. Create true free markets by adopting the BIPCOT No Government License. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows use or modification of any product, service, or software except by governments or government agents. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Freedom Fiends.
Final segment, Redemption in the Third Act, and we're talking about how rules often make things worse and create problems that would not exist without the rules. And we covered how prohibition, war on drugs, or even alcohol prohibition for that matter, created the illicit markets and made things worse in that regard. And now we're talking about how traffic laws actually make things worse. I've told the story before, but it's always good to repeat it. When I lived in the Detroit area, I would actually drive through the city of Detroit, and there was this fairly busy intersection, and for probably 2 or 3 months, the traffic lights at that intersection were out. I don't know what happened, if power cables got messed up or if it was just Detroit, but it didn't work. And what was really interesting was people, like when it first happened, it just turned into a four-way stop. So people come to the intersection, and it's a four-way stop. They stop, traffic goes, and then they go, and it keeps going like that. Now, this is like around 5 o'clock. This is rush hour time, prime travel time at this fairly good-sized intersection. And traffic is going smoothly. I mean, people are rolling through there, and you don't have a pile of dead bodies over on the corner waiting for the trash man to come pick them up. You don't have a pile of cars all crashed up over on the yard or something like that waiting for the tow truck to come get them. People are just going through it, and it's working safely. So anyway, after the light was out for probably about a month and a half or so, I saw some workers out there, and I'm like, oh, good, they're finally going to get this thing fixed. And about another month or two goes by, and it's working again. And once the light starts working again, I notice that there's these big giant traffic backups, and there's times where I have to wait 2 or 3 rotations of the light just to get through the intersection, where before it went so much quicker.
Yeah, people tend to figure that out. I've noticed the same phenomenon around here whenever we have the things that are out for any extended period of time. Like, people just adapt and they figure out, and they're not waiting for, like, because the time light systems that we have around here are just ridiculous, because, like, you know, you'll be waiting there forever and there's nobody else around on the other side in certain sections. And then other times it just backs up because, like you said, it's just during what heavier traffic times, it just, I don't know how they designed them originally. I don't know. Maybe it was for, like, a lot less cars, but it's just not conducive for the way people actually drive. And yeah,
well, supposedly they do all these traffic studies, and it's an ongoing thing to try and improve the driving experience, and yet it's still a mess. I mean,
yeah,
if you could go through at prime time and without traffic lights and it works smoothly, but when the traffic lights are there, that's when you get the traffic backed up, there's a problem there. Have you guys seen the videos of places where the traffic lights go out? Or there's even some places like over in Asia or even Africa where they don't even have traffic lights at these intersections. And it's actually kind of scary to watch the video, but people go through there all day long and you don't have accidents. You don't have anything piling up. It's actually a free-for-all, kind of scary looking type deal.
Yeah, I've seen, well, there's also places in Europe, like the one, this guy, what was his name, modern Hopper or something.
Motorhead.
Motorhead. The one he designed, and there was a couple other ones that did it too, and I've seen videos there, and yeah, like, looking at it, some people get freaked out because most people are moving pretty quick through all these different intersections and different twists and turns and stuff, but it works because they're not distracted by all these other signs. They're not held up by this light waiting for people to, you know, point them in different directions and naturally slowing everything down. And people just know how, you know, it's, you know, people are like, oh, that, you know, it's, especially here in New York, it's like, well, people are horrible to each other. Well, yeah, but they're even more horrible because they have to follow all these stupid traffic laws.
So they needed just one sign at the beginning of the town that said 30 kilometers per hour speed limit, and then added free of traffic signs on that one sign.
Oh, the irony.
I assume that was supposed to be humor.
Well, you know what just what really causes distracted driving? Looking for cops at the speed trap.
Wow.
No, you pay all that. You pay more attention to looking for cops than you do being on the road. Yeah. I know when I see a cop in the rearview mirror, I don't feel safe and protected. I feel like a target. But anyway, thanks for coming on tonight, guys. Thanks to everybody for listening. For more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com. And check out Randy's blog. I will put a link to his article in the show notes.